Now the first of 8 readings from The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey, her enduringly popular tale of adventure and romance set in England and France. The year is 1792, at the height of the Reign of Terror. Reading the first part, The League of the Scarlet Pimpernel, is Damian Lewis.
A surging, seething, murmuring crowd of beings that are human only in name, for to the eye and ear they seem naught but savage creatures, animated by vengeance and hate. The hour, some little time before sunset. The place, the West Barricade, at the very spot where, a decade later, a proud tyrant raised an undying monument to the nation's glory and his own vanity. During the greater part of the day, the guillotine was kept busy at its ghastly work in the name of liberty and fraternity. And every afternoon, before the city gates were closed, some aristocrat would try to slip through the barriers. They were nearly always caught. Sergeant Bibot, at the West Gate especially, had a wonderful nose for scenting a fugitive, however perfect the disguise. No wonder, then, that on this fine afternoon in September, the crowd round Bibot's gate was eager and excited. The lust of blood grows with its satisfaction. There is no satiety. The crowd had seen 100 noble heads fall beneath the guillotine today. It wanted to make sure that it would see another 100 fall tomorrow. But today, all the sergeants in command of the various barriers had had special orders. Recently, a very great number of aristocrats had succeeded in fleeing France. Rumours spread that these escapes were organised by a band of daring Englishmen, whose leader was spoken of with a superstitious shudder, whose pluck and audacity were almost fabulous. The guard had been doubled, and a reward of 5,000 francs offered to the man who laid hands on the mysterious and elusive Scarlet Pimpernel. The sun was sinking low in the west, and Sergeant Bibot prepared to close the gates. A dozen or so covered carts were drawn up in a row, ready to leave town to fetch the produce for market the next morning. The women who drove the carts usually spent their day on the Place de la Grève, beneath the platform of the guillotine, knitting and gossiping, whilst head after head fell beneath the knife.
"Eh, la mère, what have you got there?" said Bibot to one hideous old market woman in a filthy cap with straggling grey hair.
He had seen her earlier near the guillotine with her knitting. Now she had fastened a row of curly locks to the whip handle and stroked them with her huge, bony fingers as she laughed at Bibot.
"I made friends with Madame Guillotine's lover," she said. "He cut these from the heads as they rolled down. He has promised me some more tomorrow, but I don't know if I shall be at my usual place."
"Ah, how is that, la mère?" asked Bibot.
"My grandson has got the smallpox," she said with a jerk of her thumb towards the inside of her cart. "Some say it's the plague. If it is, I shan't be allowed to come into Paris tomorrow."
Bibot had stepped hastily backwards when the old hag spoke of the plague.
"Get out with you," he shouted.
"Curse you, citoyen, for being a coward," the old hag cried with a coarse laugh as she whipped up her lean nag and drove out of the gate.
This incident had spoilt the afternoon for the crowd. They hung about the barricades, sullen and suspicious, as if the plague lurked already in their midst. Suddenly, a captain of the guard appeared.
"A cart!" he shouted breathlessly, even before he had reached the gates. "Driven by an old hag! A covered cart!"
"But there were a dozen!"
"An old hag who said her grandson had the plague! You have not let them go?"
"Morbleu," said Bibot, whose purple cheeks had suddenly become white with fear. "The cart contained the ci-devant Comtesse de Tournay and her 2 children, all of them traitors!"
"And their driver?"
muttered Bibot, as a shudder ran down his spine.
"Sacré tonnerre!" said the captain.
It was that accursed Englishman himself, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
The Fisherman's Rest at Dover was a prosperous inn. Though they were mostly fisherfolk who patronised its coffee room, it was something more than a rendezvous for these humble sailors. The London and Dover coach started from the hostel daily, and passengers who had come across the Channel and those who started for the Grand Tour all became acquainted with the landlord, Mr. Jellyband, his French wines, and his home-brewed ales. It was a day towards the close of September 1792. Sally, the landlord's buxom daughter, came into the coffee room and deposited freshly filled tankards upon the tables to shouts and good-natured applause.
"Now then, Sally," said Jellyband, "get on with my Lord Tony's supper, for if it ain't the best we can do and he not satisfied, see what you'll get, that's all."
"Are you expecting special guests then tonight, Mr. Jellyband?" asked Mr. Hempseed, one of the regulars.
"Aye, that I be," replied Jellyband. "Friends of my Lord Tony hisself. Dukes and duchesses from over the water yonder, whom the young lord and his friend, Sir Andrew Ffoulkes, and other young noblemen have helped out of the clutches of them murdering devils."
Feeling in every part of England ran very high at this time against the French and their doings, and Mr. Jellyband succeeded in mounting his favourite hobby horse.
"They do say some of them French chaps have come over here a purpose to make us Englishmen agree with their murdering ways. Why, I wouldn't so much as drink a glass of ale with one of them, and nothing to make me change my opinions."
At one table, two customers, gentlemen apparently by their clothes, had pushed aside their half-finished game of dominoes and had been listening for some time, evidently with amusement. One of them now, with a quiet, sarcastic smile still lurking round the corners of his mouth, turned towards Mr. Jellyband and said quietly,
"Here's to your very good health, my worthy host, if you'll do me the honour to finish this bottle of wine with me."
"Well, I'm sure you're very polite, sir," said Mr. Jellyband. "I don't mind if I do."
The stranger poured out two tankards of wine and offered one to Jellyband.
"Loyal Englishmen as we all are," he said, "we must admit that this at least is one good thing which comes to us from France."
"Aye, well, none of us deny that, sir," assented Jellyband.
Sally came running back, excited and eager.
"I think I see my Lord Antony's horse out in the yard, father," she said, as she ran across the coffee room.
But already the door had been thrown open from outside, and the next moment a hearty voice echoed along the polished rafters of the coffee room.
"Aye, and bless your brown eyes for being so sharp, Sally," said the man who had just entered.
Lord Antony Dewhurst crossed over to the hearth, and as he did so, he cast a suspicious glance at the two strangers who had quietly resumed their game of dominoes. For a moment, a look of deep anxiety clouded his face. But only for a moment. The next he turned to Mr. Hempseed, who was respectfully touching his forelock.
"Well, Mr. Hempseed, and how is the fruit?"
"Badly, my lord, badly," replied Mr. Hempseed dolefully. "But what can you expect with this here government bringing in ungodly foreign fruit and favouring them rascals over in France who would murder their king and all their nobility?"
"So they would," replied Lord Antony. "At least those they can get hold of. But we've got some friends coming here tonight who at any rate have evaded their clutches."
"Thanks to you, my lord, and to your friends, so I've heard it said," said Mr. Jellyband. But Lord Antony's hand fell warningly on his arm.
"Hush,"
he said, and again looked towards the strangers.
"Oh, Lud love you, they're all right, my lord," retorted Jellyband. "That gentleman over there is as true and loyal a subject of King George as you are yourself, my lord."
"Ah, we are among friends," said Lord Antony.
"But tell me, you have no one else staying here, have you?"
"Sir Percy Blakeney and his lady will be here presently, but they ain't a-going to stay."
"Lady Blakeney?" queried Lord Antony in some astonishment.
"Aye, my lord. My lady's brother is crossing over to France today in Sir Percy's yacht, and Sir Percy and my lady will come with him as far as here to see the last of him."
Sally, who all this while had been laying the table, asked,
"How many shall I lay for, my lord?"
"Five places, Sally.
but let the supper be enough for 10 at least. Our friends will be tired and, I hope, hungry.
Why, here they are, I do believe,
said Sally excitedly, and as she spoke, a party of 4 entered the coffee room.
Welcome, welcome to England, said Lord Antony effusively, as he came eagerly forward with both hands outstretched towards the newcomers.
They all looked a merry, even a happy party as they sat round the table. Sir Andrew Ffoulkes and Lord Antony Dewhurst, 2 good-looking and well-bred Englishmen, and the aristocratic French Countess with her daughter Suzanne and the young Vicomte de Tournay. The strangers had finished their game, and one of them rose, standing with his back to the company, adjusting his large triple-caped coat. As he did so, his companion slid to his knees and crawled noiselessly under the oak bench. The stranger then walked quietly out of the room. None of those at the supper table had noticed this curious silent manoeuvre, but when the stranger finally closed the door, they instinctively gave a sigh of relief. The young Vicomte de Tournay rose, glass in hand, and said in broken English,
To His Majesty George III of England, God bless him for his hospitality.
And to Monsieur le Comte de Tournay de Basserive, said Lord Antony, may we welcome him in England before many days are over.
Ah, monsieur, said the Comtesse, I can but trust in God and hope.
Aye, madame.
Here interposed Sir Andrew Ffoulkes.
Trust in God, by all means, but believe also a little in your English friends and their leader, the Scarlet Pimpernel, who have sworn to bring the Count safely across the Channel, even as they have brought you today.
The Scarlet Pimpernel? Said Suzanne. What is the Scarlet Pimpernel, monsieur?
The Scarlet Pimpernel, mademoiselle, said Sir Andrew, is the name of a humble English wayside flower, but it is also the name chosen to hide the identity of the best and bravest man in all the world.
Ah, yes, interposed the young Vicomte. I have heard speak of this Scarlet Pimpernel. They say in Paris that every time a royalist escapes to England, that devil Fouquier Tinville receives a paper with that little flower designated in red upon it.
That is so, assented Lord Antony.
May God protect you all, messieurs, said the Countess, for in France treachery is rife all in the name of liberty and fraternity.
The women have been more bitter against us aristocrats than the men, said the Vicomte with a sigh.
Ah, yes, added the Comtesse. Marguerite Saint-Just, for instance. She denounced the Marquis de Saint-Cyr and all his family to the Tribunal of the Terror.
Marguerite Saint-Just, said Lord Antony as he shot an apprehensive glance across at Sir Andrew.
Yes, replied the Comtesse. Surely you must know her.
Know her? Said Lord Antony, the most fashionable woman in London, the wife of the richest man in England. Of course we all know Lady Blakeney.
She was a schoolfellow of mine at the convent in Paris, interposed Suzanne, and I cannot believe that she ever did anything so wicked.
Marguerite Saint-Just's brother is a noted Republican, continued the Comtesse coldly. There was a family feud between him and my cousin, the Marquis de Saint-Cyr. You had not heard this story?
Faith, madam, I did hear some vague rumours of it, but in England no one would credit it.
That may be, monsieur, but I pray God that while I remain in this beautiful country, I may never meet Marguerite Saint-Just.
Even as she spoke, a stable boy had thrown open the coffee-room door, shouting excitedly,
Sir Percy Blakeney and my lady have arrived!
Damien Lewis was reading the first episode of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. The book is abridged by Sarah Kilgariff and is a CSA Word production for BBC Radio 2 by Clive Stanhope. Next week, Marguerite St. Just meets an old friend from her days in Paris. But why is he in England?